I'd like now to welcome to the program documentary photographer Tony O'Brien. His new book is called Light in the Desert, Photographs from the Monastery of Christ in the Desert. And he will be speaking on Sunday, the 23rd of October, doing a lecture and book signing at the New Mexico History Museum Auditorium. And that is in conjunction with a show that's going on there called Contemplative Landscape. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So this is a book of photographs taken at this Monastery of Christ in the Desert. How did you end up there?
Well, it's probably a bit of a long story, but...
That's what we're here for.
I had known of Christ in the Desert for a number of years. I used to work at the New Mexican and heard about the monastery and often thought about going up and really never made it. When I had come back, I had been in Afghanistan, and at 1989 when I came back, some people actually... The good sisters at Mount Carmel suggested that I go up. And so I went up and I spent about 2 weeks sort of on a retreat, gathering my thoughts and whatnot. That's my first real contact with the monastery.
And now, were you Catholic? Were you?
I was brought up a Catholic. And actually, when I went to high school, I went to a Benedictine high school in Washington, D.C. So I knew of the Benedictines. Which is what they are at Christ in the Desert. And I had always been a bit fascinated with the Benedictines. They'd never fit the mold, so to speak. And I kind of liked that.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't know. They're just a little different as opposed to the Jesuits or other monastic or religious organizations. To me, they're always a little quirky. And that seemed to suit me. And after that, I had been working for different magazines and going out on assignments and whatnot. And at one point, I thought it might be very interesting to do a story about monastic life, or contemplative life, let's say. And that's really what got me up there.
To do a story about contemplative life, to what extent is it required that you be in a state of contemplation yourself?
Well, in a sense, it's probably quite important. When I first went, I thought, you know, I was approaching the story. They have a guest house, so I thought if they would allow me to do it, I would stay in the guest house and then photograph as I went along. But I quickly realized that it wasn't going to work. I was too much of an outsider, and I was trying to, in a sense, capture the essence of the life. And so I spoke with the abbot, who was a prior at that time, Philip, and talked about it, and he said, well, why don't you just become a member for a while?
Or meaning what?
Why don't you become part of the community for a while?
Does that mean you're kind of a lay Benedictine monk?
No. But I was allowed to enter the community and be part of the community. I had my own cell, I had my own choir seat, and I had access to the life. And that's how it started.
And what was the life like? You get up in the morning, I think, pretty early.
Yes. Earlier than I was really accustomed to. You get up about 3:30 in the morning. Vigils is at 4.
That's not morning.
And the day goes on from there until about 8 o'clock at night. And the day is divided into two parts, work, and then also we'll call it lectio, where you... All right, prayer, you're in your room, you're in your cell, and you're reading or whatnot.
How long did you stay there?
What I would do is I would go up anywhere from a week, 2 weeks, a month, and sometimes 3 weeks, and come back here to Santa Fe. I was married at the time. We had a child, and that's what I did.
And you did that for, what, the better part of a year?
Yeah.
So how did you, I mean, I would think, even though it's broken up by coming back, obviously, and you don't have that unbroken contemplative time and getting into the rhythm of it, still I would imagine that you do get into the rhythm of it and it kind of changes your own pace after a while.
Oh, for sure. It did. I mean, it was, you have to come back in and out, which was kind of strange, but... The monastery is located at the end of a 13-mile dirt road, and it's right along the Chama River Canyon. And it's one of the more beautiful river canyons in New Mexico. So for me, going up it was interesting. When I got up above Espanola, the landscape in many ways was similar to parts of Afghanistan that I'd been in. And once on the forest road, you had time to decompress and slowly start to re-enter this world. And the same thing applied when I left. It gave me time to sort of prepare myself to entering the other world that I was part of.
The monastic life is so simple. You live in a cell, you have a desk, you warm yourself on these wood-burning stoves, you work, and it's simple work. The monasteries, as you write in the book, are, they're not always, but they've strived to be pretty much self-sufficient. And then you go back to what is inevitably a more complex urban life.
Yeah. I remember I used to get out of the car, put my feet on the ground and say, okay, here we go now. Off we go into another place. But my family was very supportive, and you take it with you. I mean, it's when you're involved at that in that way, it slowly becomes more and more a part of you and how you do things and how you go about your life. And so that was quite wonderful.
What was the actual work you did there besides photographing?
Let's see, manual labor, digging ditches, working on the road, clearing brush, cleaning, pretty much the gamut.
And then how did you make the photographs? I mean, I get the sense, both from your writing and from the pictures themselves, that it's a non-aggressive process. So you don't go out and get the pictures. It's sort of like you let them arise or let them happen.
Well, I think that kind of happened. I mean, I came out of a world, I'm a photojournalist, that's what I did, where you do grab the pictures.
Yeah.
But I do, and I had, at that time, preferred to work on long-term projects. Because, you know, as photographers, we take. And when you're involved in a long-term project, there's more of a give and take. And you almost give something back, in a sense. So when I went, I had my camera with me. The monks knew. I spoke to them. If anybody was not, you know, interested or was against my being there, I gave them the opportunity to speak up. Once I was welcomed into the community, I had my camera with me, but I probably, for the first month, never took any photographs. It helped me sort of get a sense of the life there without interfering with it. And then also gave them a chance to get used to me. And then I began to photograph. And it probably was, after about 6-7 months, I really wasn't a photographer anymore. I was Tony. So even when I was photographing, it was just natural for everyone involved.
And I think so they got used to you.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. I mean, I was part of the community. And it probably that experience changed my photography. It changed how I looked at things, how I saw. But it also, I remember you could sit in your choir seat and watch things unfold, and I sort of came to the conclusion, well, if I miss that, another one will come.
Yeah.
It's okay. And just wait and watch. And invariably, it always happened.
When you say it changed how you looked at things, what do you mean?
I became, in many ways, much more aware of my surroundings, much more of the present. And the other part to it is you sit in the chapel there, and it has incredible natural light that changes throughout the day, throughout the morning, and just watching the light.
So did you go back to that kind of high-paced, fast-paced photojournalism after that?
Not really. And I think this was also, and it was sort of unbeknownst to me, a time of transition in my life.
Yeah. You write about a very close friend named Nader Ali, with whom you were in prison in Afghanistan. And he, even without being in this book visually in any way, he's a very important part of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's very important in my life. He's a part of my life, will always be a part of my life. I guess it was when I was in prison with him that we discussed a lot of things. We discussed life, we discussed this and that. But he had an amazing trust in God, his God. He was a Muslim. He was a Shiite Muslim. But an amazing faith. It really affected me. I remember one day I was sitting in a cell and I was depressed and this and that. Life was over. Everything was terrible. And I remember I was sitting on this bunk. All of a sudden this sort of bald head popped up at the foot of the bed. And he looked at me and he was very concerned because he could tell I was not happy at all. And he looked at me and he said, raised his arm up and he said, "Don't you worry, Tony. God will take care of us." And I remember thinking, my God, here I am in this prison cell. But, and please don't take this wrong, but I'm kind of like the white guy. I'm the visitor. I'm probably getting more attention than he ever will in his life because people were trying
Everybody's
to get
concerned about trying to get you out
and whatnot. And he's taking care of me.
Yeah.
And he's worried about me.
What was he there for? You were working for Life magazine and you were captured. What was...
He was in prison because he was just an average guy, but wanted to be part of the movement trying to drive the Soviets out. And he had been caught passing information back and forth in Kabul. And so he was put in prison and was going to do a long, long time if they didn't kill him. I mean, he really didn't know what was going to happen to him.
And what happened to him?
He was actually released, and it was very strange. I had just gone back to Kabul, and Kabul was in disarray. It was in chaos. The Mujahideen had taken it. The government was down, and, of course, there was a lot of infighting for control of the city. And so I went back to cover that, but I actually really went back to see if I could find Nader Ali. And lo and behold, I did. He had just been released from prison, I think 13 days before I got to Kabul.
Oh, my goodness.
And when, that's an interesting story. When I got there, you know, I went around trying to talk to people to see if there's any way I could find my cellmate, my former cellmate. I remember going to see, actually, Hamid Karzai. And at that time, he was foreign minister. And I went to the UNHCR, and people were like, oh, what are, you know, I hope you can find him, but there's really nothing we can do. And at that time, the UNHCR was giving little bits of money to prisoners that were released because the prison fell and everybody got out. And they said, but the chances of you finding him really are pretty nil. And I remember leaving, and there was an Afghan woman at the reception. It was the receptionist. She said, what are you doing here? And I explained to her, and she said, what's his name? And I said, well, Nader Ali, father of Muhammad Hussein. And then I left, and she said, well, if somebody comes in, I'll let you know. And I left, and a couple of days went by, and I thought, this is not going to work. It's, you know. And I was kind of sad. And then I got a phone call saying, your friend, he just came in. He was here. And I was like, well, my God, where is he? I'll be right down. Well, he left. And I thought, oh, God, how Afghan. And so I went down. She said, no, but he's coming back. He's coming back. So I went down to see her. And I said, well, did he remember me? And she looked at me and she smiled. And she said, did he remember you? When I told him there was somebody looking for you, a journalist, he couldn't figure it out. He just couldn't understand. And finally she said, it's an American. He's a photographer. He was in prison with you. And he went, oh, Tony O'Brien, 520 Gonzales Road, Santa Fe, New Mexico, 87505, Father William O'Brien. And I said to him, I said, how did you remember that? And he said, well, you know, when you left, you gave me your address. But they came to the cell, they took it, and they found it. So I went to the wall, and I scratched your name in it so I would never forget you. And we went back to the prison cell, and there it was. And I remember him saying to me that day, you know, Tony, I know you better than anyone in the world. And you know me better than anyone in the world.
Tony O'Brien is a documentary photographer. His new book is called Light in the Desert, Photographs from the Monastery of Christ in the Desert. Thank you so much for being with us.
Sure. Thank you very much.